You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
We wish to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations lands, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. Good morning, I'm Jean Hamill. Welcome. Usually at this point, the presider makes a few comments. I only have one. The book that we're reading, Sapiens, an extremely interesting book. It's not too late to join. There, that makes it two. Says that the Neanderthals are gone. I disagree. Okay, where are we here? Each week, in order to remain aware of our treaty obligations and the relationship we have with our First Nations sisters and brothers, we read one of the 94 recommendations sent to all levels of government by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. We expect to complete these readings in June. We call upon the federal government to work with the churches and Aboriginal communities, community leaders, to inform the families of children who died at residential schools of the child's burial location and to respond to families' wishes for appropriate commemoration ceremonies and markers and reburial in home communities where requested. We have two readings this morning. The first one is from Douglas Adams and his book, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Meanwhile, the poor babble fish, by effectively removing all barriers to communication between the different races and cultures, has caused more and bloodier wars than anything else in the history of creation. The second reading is by Elizabeth Kostova from The Historian. Never before had I known the sudden quiver of understanding that travels from word to brain to heart, the way a new language can move, coil, swim into life under the eyes, the almost savage leap of comprehension, the instantaneous, joyful release of meaning, the way the words shed their printed bodies in a flash of heat and light, offered as wisdom for the journey.
The choir is about to offer you a song entitled When I Close My Eye, and the composer of the song is Jim Papoulis. Just wanted to share with you the project notes that we received in our music, written from the composer. This is a gentleman who, Jim Papoulis donates his composer royalties to the Foundation for Small Voices. The Foundation for Small Voices is a nonprofit organization dedicated to creating music that crosses cultural, generational, and ideological boundaries with and for children, raising awareness and funds for programs in music and mentoring worldwide. The project notes are as follows. It seems to me now that we are all struggling with an increasing amount of negative influences in the lives of children. They are bombarded by information that ultimately erodes their sense of self. In the classroom, in the rehearsal hall, I have been fortunate to speak with children from diverse cultures and backgrounds. I have heard their songs and their silences, and what they have shared has made me clearly see that in order for a child to feel strength and to believe in themselves, it must come from within. When I close my eyes, then I can see, and I am not afraid.
Thank you. That was beautiful. Thank you. And especially thank you, Babette, for sharing the notes with us, because it really helps us see how even, you know, it's just so much more meaningful with that and with his thoughts on that. So thank you for that. I invite you now to join me in the words of commitment as we close this sharing time. As I live every day, I want to be a channel for peace. May I bring love where there is hatred, and healing where there is hurt, joy where there is sorrow, and hope where there is fear. I pray that I may always try to understand and comfort other people, as well as seeking comfort in others and from them. Wherever possible, may I choose to be a light in the darkness, a help in times of need, and a caring, honest friend. And may justice, kindness, and peace flow from my heart forever. Amen. I have memorized that with sorrow instead of sadness. I have no idea why. We're going to move into our song and then into perspectives, which is now all set up.
One moment, please. I will lead you in the next song, standing from the back. We are going to be really creative, and we're going to start the song at the chorus. Would that be all right? I promise not to let you down here. We'll have to sing it as it is on the screen here. Here we go.
And whether I live close beside you, whether I whether I am as you live out the marvel, the wonder that you
Greta was not going to be here when I was bringing this message, but I'm going to say the same things. We went and saw the movie Arrival, just on a chance. How many have seen Arrival, the movie Arrival? So a number of you. Much that one could say about it, will be witnessed during the trailer, which will now be put on this screen.
Story beyond your life, like the day they arrived.
Signs of what might be called first contact. The objects measure at least.
I'm Colonel G.T. Webb with Army Intelligence.
Pack your bags.
You're at the top of everyone's list when it comes to translations.
Priority one.
What do they want? Where are they from?
You'll be reporting to me, but you'll be working with him when you're in the show.
That's what they call it, the UFO.
Who's being carted off in the medevac?
Not everyone is wired for what you're about to do.
So what do they look like?
You'll see soon enough.
Every 18 hours, a door opens up. That's where we go in.
It's time.
Yeah, that has happened.
What happens now?
They need to see me.
Dr. Banks?
Are you insane?
Now that's a proper introduction.
More objects have landed around the world.
This is one of 12. I'm never going to be able to speak their words.
Got 2 days. Figure something out.
I am a human. It's their language. We need to make sure that they understand the difference between a weapon and a tool. Language is messy, and sometimes one can be both.
Are you dreaming in their language? It's possible they're prodding us to fight among ourselves.
This is just a way to force us to work together for once.
It's more complicated than that.
How is it more complicated?
Russia just executed one of their own to keep their secrets.
Got 21 hours
before they start global war.
So how do we clarify their intentions?
I go back in.
Why does this feel worse?
For those of you that have seen this movie, for those of you that have seen other movies that, say, Greta has spoken about, and for those of you that have seen the movie, you will know immediately what I mean by saying that if you went with somebody and you talked after, you might have had very different ideas of what the movie was about, how it hit you, what it meant to you, and whatever. The difference is in reading a story. Now, you look at the reviews of a movie, and there's so many different takes on it, so many different opinions, so much meant something to somebody. When Greta and I watched it together, for instance, the movie from last week, the Manchester by the Sea, what she took out of that was very different than what I took out of it. And I'm saying that particularly, what we bring out, because we were two different people going into the movie, and we were two different people on a particular week, in a particular day, in a particular state of health or whatever, and so we brought different things out of the movie. When you ever read a review of a book or a movie, And that's not how you saw it at all. They really loved it and you couldn't even get into it, or they didn't like it and it meant the world to you, and that's our differences. So I wanted to say that at the start before we get into what I got out of it, was the differences in how we receive the talk in there, you know, after we've listened to a message from anybody and how people take it. And then there's the fact that this was a book turned into a movie, and there's many, many, many movies that are come by that way. So someone wrote a story. Ted Chiang wrote. It was called The Story of Your Life. That's how he called his story. And then the producer took that and made a movie out of it. So right there, that person read the story, and took what he found meaningful or what he thought would make a good movie, and he took out of that. So what got left, what was on the scrap table, and maybe the author would look and say, oh, you've missed the most meaningful part of my story, and this, well, it's my story now. And so it all changes like that. And you've probably seen, have you ever read a book and then found out it was going to be made into a movie and you didn't want to see the movie because they were going to wreck whatever images you had in your head? Anne of Green Gables, that six-part CBC one, they didn't wreck anything, and that went to me. That was Marilla. They were all there. But how we see a story, and someone else would have liked the first Miracle on 34th Street much better than the colored 34th. So it's all how we take those things, and then whether, you know, some people were saying that they didn't get into the plot, they didn't understand what was happening in the movie. So my first confession is that when Greta and I are watching a program, she actually gets the plot. Like, she knows what's happening in the movie. I rarely do. I do not follow plots because they're complicated. And they're like an espionage plot. I don't know who's doing what. What I watch is how they're treating each other, how they're talking to each other. Are they getting along? Is there tension there? What's going on? I have no idea what they're doing. Really, I'm not exaggerating. I really don't understand what's happening. But I love to see how it's happening. And Greta, well, she gets the how, but she also knows what. So I'm always saying, is that good or bad? That's usually what I say. Is that good or bad? Are they good or bad? I don't know. And then if she doesn't explain it, it doesn't really matter because I just go on watching how they are relating. Now, that's a confession. I'm not embarrassed at all. It's just me. It's what I like about that. But the plot, sometimes I'll miss something, or you could miss something in the plot because you didn't hear a particularly important line. Some of your popcorn was too loud, you didn't, whatever, you missed an important line. And then nothing made sense the way the writer wanted to make it make sense to you because you missed that piece. And I'm just drawing from that. How many times in the drama of our lives do we miss a particular sentence? If you've raised kids, they've got a sentence in their head, they think they heard or they didn't get it explained, and it stays in that capsule for years and years and years, and you don't even know they thought. But if they'd had a different sentence, things would have gone differently. And half the time we don't know that we've missed the sentence or the piece. Or we saw it, we heard it, but we didn't get its significance. We didn't get it was that important till after. And we remember later and we put it back together. Well, we can go back and watch the movie again. But life doesn't work that way. We then go back and do it again. You can have conversations. I've had conversations at work. I've had conversations in my family. And it came so clear. If only we'd known that that's what was said, or if we'd only known that that's what the person meant, or now saying they meant, or whatever, to work that through and make it different. And we often would say, that would have made such a difference. And we can't go back and do that. So I just wanted to say that at the beginning, that the word perspectives is exactly that, what I take out of it. So there's no wrong perspective, but when someone's perspective is different than mine, which it usually is, because it contains some plot, but when it's different than mine, my first reaction is, no, that's not what it means. No, that's not what that... And then I'm shut. I shut down. It's only what I say it means. And that can be mine. That's fine. But if I open a little crack and say, what? What did you get? What kind of peculiar idea did you have about that? Or what error did you fall into? Or what? If I can do that with slightly less patronization and learn something, then my perspective gets wider. My younger daughter came home. She was really liking this boy. And And he evidently was just smart, and he was always right and always right. And she says, drives me crazy, he's always right. She said, I'll say something and he'll say something, and then I realize I'm wrong. And I said, well, honey, well, as soon as you hear his statement, and if it turns out to be right, all you have to do is agree with that, and then it's your perspective. Your perspective just got bigger. And so she went back and that's what I wanted. Like, you don't like it at the start, but if we're defensive because it's mine, as opposed to what can I learn here, or what can I get bigger, then all of a sudden I'm bigger, and I like that. I like getting bigger, although there's usually some pain involved. I have some friends. I don't like hearing from them at all. Not at all. An issue comes up, oh no, I'm going to be expanded here, because I already know we differ on that. So I pulled three themes out of the movie that I just wanted to roll by you. The one that they really, really emphasized in all the reviews was not the one that, I think of it, wasn't the one I picked out, because it actually involved more plot. So that's probably why I missed it. But the idea, the first time was knowing the future. That was a very big theme in this. And so I'm not going to spoil it for those of you that haven't seen the movie or wish to see the movie, although little bits might, you know, prime you for it. But the whole idea was, at the beginning of the film, what we think are flashbacks are flash forwards. I believe I've just ruined it for you. But yes. My first venture into a plot, and I've ruined everything for you. So the idea of knowing the future is a strong, strong theme, and it gets very poignant in the movie. It twists back and forth, and you don't know what you're watching. You don't know whether you're watching present or past or future, and you don't know if the person on the screen knows which time zone they're in. And if you could put the first slide up there, aliens have landed. Just this oval shaped black thing sits there. They can't even say the aliens have landed, which is the phrase everyone wants to say, because they don't touch the ground. So they're hovering. Aliens are hovering, and they just sit there. What happens in the movie is these are the hands of the main character. She is given a gift of communicating and thinking in the way the aliens do. And that's what's happening when she's reaching like that. And the way they think is non-linear, linearly about time. They see it all at the same time. All at the same time. And when she can do that, and I don't even think she realizes that that's the gift she's been giving. It's given. It's just this is how she's living now. And they call it the gift of omni-awareness. Awareness of everything, with no sections of time. It can all happen. It doesn't matter that way, non-linear. And the question's raised in, if we knew what was going to happen in our lives in 10 years, if we knew what was going to happen in 1 year, if we knew what was going to happen when we pulled out of the parking lot, you know, what difference would it make? And then, of course, the whole question is, would we have any free will to change it if we're seeing what's going to happen? It brings up this entirely huge philosophical discussion about free will or determinism or whatever. Do we have choices if we were to see the future? And a side point for me very much was when those of us who have or still do attribute omni-awareness to an extra terrestrial, extra supreme being, what does that do if the future is already known, right? If it's already known, what difference can we make? And if we knew it would go that way, could we choose differently? But as far as I know, and this is my blood, we can't. So we're stuck with not knowing a ton about what might happen or whatever. And so I'm going to hold on to that thought, because each of the three themes I'm thinking, I want to bring our values back in there and say, since we can't know this or we can't be sure about this, how would we make those decisions? And it has to keep coming back to the best we can on the best values we can embrace. That's what we can do with not knowing the future. The other question that was raised was, if you knew there was going to be pain at the end of, say, a particular relationship, loss, disappointment, but there was going to be a whole lot of good before that, would you choose, if you could, say, no, I don't want to do it at all because there's going to be pain? or it'll be worth it, or what? And those are the questions, you know, to ask for that, to ask about that. The second slide there is her dilemma with that. She's knowing more than she would have known if they hadn't given her the gift, and it's disconcerting for her. So, as you know, my mom used to say that was, which is interesting, that we are sheltered from the future in a caring way sometimes, because if we had that weight upon us, we wouldn't even know how the next move to make. So we live, and meditation and mindfulness does teach a presentness with the values. The second, if you could turn to the next slide, the second theme, the first one is knowing the future or all vision. It's hard to see. Well, it was hard to see then too. That is one of us looking at two of them, far away. The second theme I wanted to roll by us was the other in life. It's a huge theme again in philosophy and psychology and all that. The other, something or someone different enough from us that we would consider them other than us, which really is everybody. Everybody's another. And some of our own selves are other to us at some times. But these obelisk things landed, and they didn't do anything. They just sat there. There was no aggression. There was no weapons coming out. There was nothing, but they sat there, and people didn't know what they were about. And so there was various reactions to this not knowing the other. And I was thinking of all the reactions I have and I see people have when someone's difference is strange enough that they don't seem one of me or one of us. And we're playing this out on a rather big field these days with everything you read and everything, whatever. So the other, who is the other? I mean, you can say in a sense everyone is the other, but other with a capital O often gets that sense of something not quite right, not quite normal, not quite me. And so in the movie, you have reactions of fear to these things, and they haven't done anything. They're just strange and big, and they sit there. So fear, and then, or curiosity, what are they about? There's a great deal of caution. There's a great deal of weaponry comes out to protect themselves from this unknown. Because if it's different, it might be dangerous. If that's the first thought we think. If it's very different, it might be dangerous. So we better hold back, protect, guard. And then we're not going to know as much because we've already decided a whole bunch. The other is, if they're different, and this is the harder one to actually admit, if they're different, they're not as good as us. They don't look like us. They look like something that we would have, like, you know, needs some evolution to come along. It looks more, you know, squirrely, squiggly kind of thing. And when they first see them, they don't look as smart as us because they're not like us. And so the temptation to make the other inferior to us. And I kind of thought it came out in what they chose to name them. Turns out these are supremely intelligent beings, and they got the names Abbott and Costello. That's what we gave them, Abbott and Costello. Somehow maybe that made us more comfortable, but we chose comic names for these gigantic intellects that had come in entire peace to us, but we that made it more comfortable for some people. So who seems other to you? Now, you know, confession again, it depends when you grow up and what enclave you lived in. I mean, I don't think I saw a person of color at all till I was in my lower... except on television, in my area. I didn't see a bottle of beer till I was 15 years old. I mean, I was very sheltered in my otherness. There was lots of other because there was lots of same. And as I grew older, I looked back at that same, the people like me, and they were as different as could be, but they tried to look all the same. And that was such a veneer that I suddenly exploded that in my head. But who is Whoopi Goldberg said, normal is in the eye of the beholder. Normal is in the eye of the beholder. Do we class people? They're normal. They're normal people. They're okay. They're good. One of the biggest things in social work you learn is the divisive nature, the harmful nature of labels. And one of the most difficult labels in psychology was that label, normal or abnormal. And one of the questions that critical social work brings to that is, who says what's normal? And who gets to put that label on certain people and certain capacities? You could describe the behavior. This person hears more voices than I do, but abnormal does a whole weight of exclusion on that. It wasn't very long ago that homosexuality came out of the book of abnormal psychology, and that labeling did more harm than did. So it, because attitudes follow the labels, and so that was it. So the idea of the other, the other, the stranger, the unknown. I thought, because these beings were so so omni-aware, that I went back into ancient texts to find out what we have always as a human race thought about strangers. And I found some beautiful thoughts, and I just wanted to read them to you. So I'll give you the year, 950 BCE. You shall not wrong a stranger or oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You shall not afflict any widow or orphan. You shall not oppress a stranger. When I put these together, that was before yesterday's announcement. So it's just even more relevant, but it works. In 800 BCE, love the stranger, for you have been strangers. You shall give to them freely, and your heart shall not close them off. 650 BCE, the measure of a person is what he does with his power to a stranger. Buddha, love your neighbor because he is you, whoever he is. And these are ancient thoughts of the stranger. 60 CE, Common Era, be hospitable to strangers. And the gospel is full of that too. So Greek, Roman, ancient thoughts about neighbor. And then and someone who's strange, because the tribalism that was there was so rife that if you're one of us, you're okay, and if you're not, you're not. And therefore, we can almost justify any kind of treatment, whether it be just less privilege or actual persecution, because you are the other, because there's a line between me and that person. So the idea of Margaret Mead, anthropologist, she said that if you need a self-serving reason to be open to the other, it's that knowledge of another culture sharpens your ability to scrutinize your own more lovingly. So even in that, you're learning about your own culture because you've been open to another, and you're seeing things from a different perspective than you did before. That's what they say. Travel, you never see your country the same when you've traveled away from it, and you come back and you look at it differently. So the other, next slide there, Peter. That's their first communication. They're just goes like on the screen. And she takes it as, I will connect. I will connect. You don't look like anything I've ever seen. You are so other right now that I could run away. I could be superior, because look at your hand compared to my beautiful hand, right? We could do all sorts of those leveling. But she puts it up there and says, I'm open. I'm not going to put a wall between you and me. So she's seeing the other is part of me, and I will connect and find the commonalities. And I will probably see differences, but I'm going to connect. So that's the second one. The third theme, so the first one was future, not knowing things. Second was the other. And the third was what most people drew out of the movie was about communication. So you could put the next slide up. That was the slide before. There we go. This is the work they had to do to try and figure out what these beings were telling them. There were so many, and these were all messages. They didn't make any sense at all. It was a tremendous amount of work. But it was very easy to see that they had come, these beings had come to communicate. And they'd even come to communicate, to give a gift of their way of thinking, because they knew 1,000 years later they were going to need us to understand them. So they were coming, I don't know, was it 12 of them all over the world, sat there inviting communication, with not one commonality about the way they communicate. You couldn't get a better example of complete distance, but we want to talk. So I want you to think of someone in your life right now that you would say, maybe not like an alien, but you might think of them that way because they just don't make sense to you at all. So you think of someone that the distance is huge. The distance is huge. You can have conversation. Now, I mean, where is Greta? Is she? There she is. There's times Greta and I are talking, you know, at various volume levels, depending on the issue. But there's times when she'll say a whole lot to me, and or she's written something, like, and I look at her, I honestly don't have a clue what she meant. I'm not being, you know, just trying to get away with something. I don't understand. And I'm not deeply stupid. I just don't get it. And there's times when I'm trying to explain something to her, and it is as clear as could be. I am articulate, intelligent, clear as could be. It is anyone in the world would understand what I am saying. And yet this unfair, unreasonable, blank look is on her face, as if I've made no sense at all. So I don't know if you're sitting with the person, but think of someone that you sometimes just don't get at all. So it would be work to communicate. Now, I really do grant that there's some people that you can decide just aren't worth the work. It's just too much work. You're not going to try and get close to that person. That's just fine. But I'm talking about when we need to talk about issues in life, when we need to talk as a community or as a globe or whatever. So the work of that, the next slide, Peter. There. She's saying, okay, I want to do the work. I want to figure out what this thing means. I want to do the work of communicating. The work involves first saying, I don't get it. I don't get what you mean. Now, there's various ways of saying that. You can say, I don't get what you mean, and nobody would. You're the problem, not me. That's not what she's doing here. She's saying, okay, I'm blank. I don't know, but I want to figure it out. Our differences aren't quite that big, although I'm sure there's times when someone has written you and that's what it seems like to you, or you don't get it. But we don't have to work that hard because we actually do speak relatively the same language. But you can think right now, even in our country, there's different languages of understanding. What makes our language different, what makes even my understanding of a certain word different than yours, depends on everything to do with my background, my education, my ideology, my everything. So even thinking we've understood each other, we don't really know what's blocking us because it's the block. That's what blocks do. They block us. We don't know that we didn't understand. I walk away from a conversation with you and I think I've understood you. The look on my face indicated to you that I did. But I didn't, but I don't know that I didn't, because I go away and tell someone what you said, and it wasn't it at all, or I got the words right, but the tone wasn't the same, and it meant something different. So the complications of that are huge. If you've ever talked with someone right from your heart, and it was a complicated thing, a difficult thing, and somehow or other they communicated to you that they understood you, they did the work to listen and ask and explore a little further, and whether or not they actually thought you were nuts or not, they didn't show it on their face. They invited you to keep talking. And by the end of it, you felt like you'd poured out you, and it was received with respect and compassion and care and interest. If you can remember one of those, I hope they happen a lot, but it's a very wonderful, beautiful human feeling to feel deeply understood and cared about by someone. And that doesn't have to be someone you're in a relationship with. That could be the counselor you went to. That could be the bank teller that you're trying to do so. That could be anybody that's actually listening to you deeply. The patience and the suspension of judgment. And that's, again, where our values come in. I think it was Kierkegaard had just in one little rubric divided ways of being into three ways. There's lots of them, but this is just how he was thinking this through. The first is aesthetic, that you live for pleasure and interest and fun, and that's wonderful. It's okay to live. It's wonderful. Then he advanced there to the second depth of living, which he called ethical, which was doing the right thing. Doing the right thing. So you're a pretty exciting person, and you're very good. But he didn't stop there. He went on to a different level, and I think that's what we try to encourage here. I know that's what makes it the extra thing for me that moves me, is the third one. Kierkegaard called it religious or spiritual, but you can also call it depth or meaning, and that moves into compassion and care. I'm not just doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do. It matters to me deeply because you matter. The other matters to me. How I treat that other matters to me because I've committed myself to this value called compassion and justice and respect and care and integrity. I fall flat on my face with it, flat on my face. There's a counselor that comes into my office. He's got an office in my work. And he'll come in and we'll start to talk. And immediately both of us can feel, because we're, you know, we just like that. And I'll find my own judgmentalness within 30 seconds. Like, whoa, I was sharp on that point. Like, you know, we just like that. So we laugh, and then I open up a little, and he opens up a little, and it just keeps going deeper. And I discover how I shut things down because I have opinions. I have opinions. I have opinions on topics of which I know a lot about. I have opinions on topics I don't know much about at all, and I just have opinions. And so that idea of the I don't know, I don't understand enough about communication, I want to learn. And I'll just end with an ancient thing, very, very ancient, actually. Moses Maimonides, and that's the 1100s. Teach your tongue to say, I do not know, and you will progress. Teach your tongue to say, I do not know, and you will progress. And I think that learning stance is something that movie showed to me so deeply. It took a lot of work. Most of the people, others in the movie, they didn't want to take the time to learn. They didn't want to go through the work of figuring out all those things these beings were telling them, even though it was probably going to be for their good, but they chose out of fear, out of hostility, out of suspicion, whatever, to close it down, and they were willing to blast them away, like to fight them before they even knew what they were about, because it was way too hard to understand. And one person stood there and said, I'm going to keep trying to understand. And because she did that, they gave the gift that enabled her, I'll just say, to save the world. And if she hadn't, it would have gone bad for all the earth. But this was the same earth that was trying to shut it down and close it down. And so I really, really found that very powerful in the movie, to say, I don't know, but I'd like to. There are people whose political views are so opposite to mine that I don't even want to hear them because they bother me so much, excepting that some of them used to be mine. So I liked to be listened to when I thought differently. So I have to not shut someone down because their ideology is different than mine. Or your taste in music, some of you I feel so badly for because of some of the music you like. And if you only knew, you know. And I've been told that by several friends who don't mince words with me, that my face can show a judgment about a kind of music. I have an opinion about the music, but I wasn't really realizing that I hurt the person who liked the music. So, you know, I blocked that. So learning that, it takes that I don't know. Teach your tongue to say, I don't know, but I want to, even if it's so different from me that I'm feeling uncomfortable. Even if it's so different from me, I want to shoot it rather than learn from it, as the movie showed. Even if it's so different, it may cost me something to give up. But if it's true and right and good and beautiful, I want it. I want to learn it. So that's the movie Arrival. And you can still go see it, because you see, I may have given a bit away, but the plot doesn't really matter. It's more how they react. You'll enjoy it. I did. So just so not knowing the future, we bring the best of our values to it. not knowing the stranger, the other, we bring the best of compassion and respect to it. And when communication is hard, when we don't understand, to teach our tongue to say, I don't know, but I want to, and bring compassion and care, the same as we would want from the other to us. And by our listening, we're actually demonstrating respect, not just saying we believe in respect. I'm going to just play a moment or two, and if you could picture an other that is a little uncomfortable for you, and just even explore that thought of, I don't know, but I'd like to know. I'd like to see that differently. Then that would be a really good thing. So when I play like that, I hope my playing doesn't, it's not to have you listen to it, it's to provide a background for you to do, which is why I don't play a piece, I just play sounds for your soundscape. Anyway, so the other. Please, yes.
And the guy said, you wrote it, we're interpreting it. And then I'm thinking Greta.
Yeah, well, Greta?
Yeah. A new type of communication. A new way of looking at things. And us trying to find ways to communicate where we've got others.
Yes, yes. Beautiful. Anyone, I'm happy to jump up if you want to say something. The thing Randy has emphasized so often in our West Hills experience with other has been to walk the walk we're talking about, or we don't have a message at all. Because if our message is that we live by humanitarian caring values, and when someone disagrees with them, we chop their head off. We haven't really demonstrated much meat in that belief. So I've often thanked Randy for that emphasis, and that's what we're in all the others, even right here and in our denomination. Then it's that respect and to find out how to communicate in ways that keep the human part solid, even in the differences. So, anything else? It's 25, isn't it? $25.
Please stand. I don't know. It's a good way to go out of here. I don't know. I don't know the future. I don't know the other. I don't know how to communicate a lot of the time. But courage and curiosity combined creates the strength that allows us to go out into the I don't know, that allows us to reach out to the people we don't understand and think we'll never comprehend, to enter into relationships that we don't know the end of them, but we know there's going to be loss one way or another. So courage and curiosity and that willingness to open our hearts, to be light in the world, to risk that, to risk knowing that's who you are. And that's the work to which we go each week. So go from this place, do that work, courage, curiosity. I don't know. Go and be there. Go in peace.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.